This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Today I'm speaking with Em Royston from Chasing Threads. Chasing Threads makes stitchable accessories and cross-stitch kits for the modern world. The first collection of unique, stylish and functional accessories that can be stitched and personalised, born from the idea to sew where you go. I had a really great conversation with Em today. We spoke a lot about the inspiration for her products, how she got started, and also about wholesaling. Em has wholesaled her products for years now, and she's achieved a lot of this via wholesaling platforms, specifically Faire. I haven't yet spoken to anyone who uses one of these platforms to wholesale their products, so as you can imagine, I was really interested. We spoke about this in lots of detail. And if you have ever considered wholesalers, but perhaps the thought of picking up the phone or sending cold emails is putting you off, I really think this is something that you're going to be interested in. So I'd love now to introduce you to Em.
So hi, Em. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Vicky. You know, it's great to be here.
So can we start with you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Em Royston and my brand is called Chasing Threads. And basically it's a kind of a modern cross-stitch travel accessories brand. And we make, well, the original idea was to sew where you go. So it all started from the idea of just marking kind of a destination with a cross. And that grew into a number of products, which I developed, designed, I get manufactured. And now I sell, market and sell kind of internationally through my own website and through other platforms and wholesale also.
Wow. We have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start right at the beginning, if that's okay, Em.
Sure.
And can you tell us how and why you started Chasing Threads? So were you a big cross stitcher? Where did it all begin?
Yeah. So, basically, I've always loved making things. I've been a kind of sewer and crafty sort of person since forever. I used to make my own clothes and things when I was a kid. And then I went on to study design at university. And I always loved product design. That was kind of the area that I went into. And it wasn't so much cross stitch necessarily back then, but it was just like making things. This idea of kind of personalizing things I got really interested in at university, and how the kind of the customer can personalize things and make them their own. And that was sort of worked through projects that I did at university. And then I just went on to try and find a job in any kind of design capacity, which isn't always the easiest. So I actually just ended up working for other small design brands that I liked. And I actually started in kind of more of a sales sort of role, because I was just like, I need a job. And so I worked for other little design companies, one of which being Suck UK, which is like a kind of quirky design brand, bit of a bad name. It was, everyone's like, Suck UK. And it was that kind of company, after a few others, that I worked for about 5 years and sort of worked my way back into design a bit more. And I designed a product for them, which was called a cross stitch map. And the idea was that it was, well, it actually, going back again, the so I designed the cross stitch map for them, and the idea was a map of the world but printed on a cross stitch fabric, because I'd done a road trip in America with my partner and cross stitched the actual road map that we'd used, and it showed the travel in thread. And I thought, I love this idea of showing your travels in thread, and that you kind of marked this map with little stitches, I developed that product for them, and they still sell it and distribute it now. And then a few years later, I went on to start my own brand. And that was one of the kind of key ideas that I wanted to take forward, which I developed into a range of passport covers, notebooks, tote bags, all with this idea of stitching where you've been. So thank I don't know if that, that. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. No, it does make loads of sense. And I'm sure I read something on your website. Am I right in thinking that you weren't actually in the UK when you set the company up?
Yeah, so it was, I was working in Suck UK at the time. And then, yeah, my husband got an opportunity to move to Hong Kong. And I thought it was, you know, a great chance for me to sort of, I've always wanted to start, had my own company. I don't know why, I've just always kind of imagined myself having my own brand. And when I was at Suck, I was always just jealous of like the product design meetings going on when I was in the sales team. And then when I was in more of the product side, I was, you know, wanted to know what the kind of the bigger brand strategy was. And I just, yeah, I found the whole process really interesting. So I knew I kind of wanted to have my own brand, to have kind of more control over everything. And so, yeah, so when we moved to Hong Kong, and that was the chance to, I just kind of worked part-time and then started on the side developing products and designing and then getting kind of manufacturing set up.
And where, do you mind me, if, I hope you don't mind me asking this, but where were you getting your products manufactured?
So locally to there. So it was actually, yeah, a really kind of interesting place to be because it's so close to, you know, the hub of Shenzhen and China and manufacturing and everything. They say everything kind of happens more quickly in Hong Kong. It's like a very, you know, fast paced sort of place to be. And I found that was really true. You know, you could get samples back from suppliers within a day or two. And yeah, it was just a really great place to be for that. And I've worked with one supplier still that I met then, and just regularly traveled to visit them and develop the products. And now they're, yeah, a really trusted supplier. So that's been, yeah, invaluable really to have that proximity.
That's amazing. That's really, what's the word? Serendipitous, I think that's the right word.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I speak to lots of people who source their products from China, but for lots of people, particularly over the last couple of years, but actually in general, because it's so far away and so expensive, most people never get to meet their supplier face-to-face or go and have a walk around because it's, you know, there's so many reasons why that isn't possible, but that must have been amazing. Absolutely. That you could actually visit and really get to build relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's obviously, there's mixed sort of opinions on China manufacturing things, and I totally understand. But it's been, yeah, it was amazing to sort of, you know, actually see and experience and get to know a company, because it's obviously a lot different when you're just on the other side of the world ordering something blindly. And I definitely had learned my lessons from other suppliers as well, where I didn't go and check kind of the products before they were sent out and that kind of thing. And you know, you get a horrible surprise when it's not what you'd expected and the quality wasn't the same as the sample and that kind of thing. But yeah, now I just know, you know, the suppliers that I do work with, totally trust and have been working with them for years. So yeah, that's a nice outcome.
Yeah, that's really good. And coming back to sort of when you got started, am I right in thinking that you ran a Kickstarter campaign in the early days?
Yeah, so it wasn't actually for the very first product, but to develop, so the passport cover was like my kind of original, and that was like, still is the bestseller, actually. It's like the kind of the starting product that's still the star. But I wanted to develop other products and I didn't really have the cash to reinvest in another production run. So yeah, I did do a Kickstarter project for the notebook. So yeah, that was really, it was quite a scary thing to do, actually, the Kickstarter. I thought it was going to be just like, oh yeah, you know, I've seen ones really take off and generate about 20,000, you know, just easily. But obviously it's, when you're actually doing it, it's quite a lot of work. And I think I raised over £5,000 to kickstart the production of that notebook. And yeah, it was really exhilarating when I did finally get that kind of pledges all in from people that, yeah, obviously originally friends and family, but then also just people that like the product. So yeah, it was a really good, if you're, you know, at the beginning and you have a kind of, I think it works really well with sort of simplistic ideas as well, kind of products that people understand quite quickly. And yeah, I think it was definitely worth doing as a way to get some funds to launch something new without that big risk.
And I guess there was an advantage that it wasn't your first product, because presumably you had some customers and people who liked what you did that then you could then approach, you know, for your Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly.
We had someone on here talking about Kickstarter campaigns or any kind of crowdfunding last year. And the big thing I took away from that episode is how much work it is. I had no idea that it would be almost like a full-time job to run a campaign. Was that your experience?
Yeah, like I definitely didn't put as much into it as I could and should probably have. But yes, it was, because it's like you kind of launch and I think there's an expectation that the website will generate quite a lot of views for you, but actually there's so many projects going live all the time that unless you're picked up by Kickstarter team, you know, it's very unlikely that you're going to get traction without bringing your own crowd. So yes, it was a lot more work than I kind of expected, and it was a bit scary when you're only halfway and you've gone over the half the time, because it is all or nothing. But yeah, and I was also already wholesaling a little bit then, so that was quite good. I could also had a few shops that pledged to sort of stock the products, so that was a nice thing, as well as using direct consumer customers that I'd already had, but kind of using those stores that I'd been working with to get behind the project and a new product.
And that's great, and we'll talk about that in a moment a little bit more, sort of where you were selling and how that came about. But one thing I'd love to know actually is, with the Kickstarter, hypothetically, let's say you came up with a completely new product idea now, would you do it again?
Yeah, good question. I think because I'm now working with a supplier that I don't have to sort of commit to massive quantities, and the things I'm making, I sort of, you know, don't order so many, and it's not like there's not a big tooling investment or anything. I wouldn't, unless there was a product that was like, you know, I need to order a big amount to make it happen, or there's a big kind of initial startup cost. And then, yeah, I would consider it. I would definitely consider it for that purpose. I can't see that at the moment, but yeah, I'd be open to it, because it is such a clever kind of idea of having the kind of almost pre-sold the stock before you've even manufactured them. I think it's, you know, it's a very good way of reducing risk for brands that are kind of giving something a go if you're not entirely sure it's going to do well.
Yes, because you're right, because as well as getting those original sales, you're also getting people to sort of put their money where their mouth is and say, yes, this is actually a good idea, which can be hard, yeah. Can't it? Because people will often tell you they think something's good, but then will they actually part with any money? It's a different thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah. And that kind of emphasis, yeah, on supporting the community and supporting small designers. It's really interesting area.
Oh, well, it's really good to know that it's something that hasn't, you know, entirely put you off doing again. So you mentioned some moments ago that you were selling direct to consumers and that you also were doing wholesale at that point. So can we talk a little bit about all of that really? So where you started selling and how that evolved. So did you start off with just a website, for example? Let's go from there.
Yeah, I basically just, at first I was using a WordPress, a very basic WordPress site that I sort of taught myself, you know, how to make. It just did the trick with WooCommerce, but it was a bit, you know, a bit shoddy. And then got my products on Etsy. I actually very nearly didn't continue to put my products on Etsy because I thought they all had to be kind of handmade to be on there. But I, in the end, I was just thought, oh, I'll put them on there. And, you know, if they tell me to take them down, then fine. But I think their policies have changed and it was an original design still. So it didn't matter that I wasn't the one actually physically making them. And yeah, that's been one of my biggest platforms. Etsy still does probably half of my direct consumer sales is through Etsy, because it's such a good kind of international marketplace and a lot comes from America, from Etsy. And then, you know, it's obviously grown in the UK as well in the last few years quite a lot. So yeah, and then more recently, well, a few, 3 years ago maybe, got onto Not on the High Street as well, which is obviously, again, like a really nice platform that's got good, you know, a big customer base, and the products work well because it's, yeah, that kind of creating your own idea and personalization, that kind of thing. So, yeah. And then I've since developed my store on Shopify, which is a lot better than the WooCommerce one, a lot less glitchy. And yeah, I've kind of dabbled in doing Facebook ads and things to get the traction on that going a bit better. And yeah, I think that's about it. There's a few other marketplaces. I do have some of the products listed on Amazon, but I haven't really invested much time in that. And I'm, yeah, it's probably not the main focus for my products at the moment. But yeah, the central world as well is just so unpleasant to be in. I just can't spend too much time there.
Oh, well, if you ever need a hand, you know where I am.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're doing really well, and I agree with you about Shopify as well. I think Shopify, if for anyone wanting to build their own site to sell their products, personally, and like I said, this is not, yeah. I've got no link with Shopify, but I just think it's great because it is so easy and
definitely
it looks really nice as well.
Yeah, it is. It's so easy to set up a shop, like in a day really, you can. And and it syncs to everything, so yeah, it's great. I definitely also highly recommend Shopify.
So you mentioned, so we've spoken a lot about selling direct to consumers. So you mentioned earlier that you were stocked in a few stores as early as a few years ago. So how did you first start wholesaling? And talk us through what you did there, please.
Yeah, sure. So that was actually probably one of the biggest benefits of when I started at Suck UK. I was working in the kind of sales side, which wasn't really my intention. I just wanted to get kind of into a product design world. But actually, it was so useful because I was essentially kind of an account manager for these wholesale shops, so selling Suck products to stores and being being the kind of admin person for those sales. So I really understood. Went going to trade shows for them. I used to go to the trade shows for them, and I just got to learn kind of the wholesale pricing, how to approach stores, all of that, pack sizes, stuff that I suppose I would have just had to learn from myself when I started my business later. I kind of had all that knowledge, so it wasn't so scary. I think I approached wholesale right from the beginning. It wasn't actually a case of waiting for that long. I think I launched a top drawer in my first or second year, because that was the path that I knew, that you would sell some direct to consumer, but wholesale was sort of the end goal for me.
It must have been invaluable having that experience, because when I was selling my range of products, I never did much wholesale, just a few local shops, because to me it was just an absolute minefield of things that I didn't know. So I can imagine having all of that experience and contacts as well, I assume. I mean, you don't need to tell us whether you were speaking to the same people, you don't need to disguise that, but I imagine just knowing people in that world must be really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and just kind of having that kind of background knowledge of how, if you want to approach a department store, just give it a go. And the big guys are probably doing the same as little businesses, just trying to look up buyers' details and get in front of them as easy as they, as the best way they can, and sending samples and all that kind of thing. It was really invaluable. And I was lucky to get a few wholesalers sort of straight away. And since then, it's grown.
So the first wholesalers you got, were they through Top Drawer? You mentioned that you went there when you were just sort of starting thinking about wholesaling. Was that what kicked it all off?
Yeah, I think I had just from direct emailing some other stockists that I knew. I had a couple of customers before then who were actually selling through Not on the High Street, and I wasn't selling Not on the High Street at that time. So it was quite perfect. They kind of dealt with that side of things, and I would sell wholesale to them. So that was my first wholesaler. I remember, so exciting when I first got that, the first orders. I was like, it's actually happening.
So were they selling your products on the High Street?
Yes, they were. Yeah. So since they don't anymore, now I took it over because I wanted sort of my brand to be there as a whole. But yes, originally they were buying my products at wholesale and then selling them on Not on the High Street.
That makes sense. And I guess that also probably gave you some confidence when you decided to sell them on Not on the High Street directly, because presumably you knew then that they were selling on Not on the High Street. And obviously they'd passed the application process to get on there in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And they were based in the UK, and at that time I was still in Hong Kong. So it just made more sense. I think at the very beginning I didn't have a warehouse. So I was relying on sort of me posting out orders or having friends in the UK help me post out orders. So it was a bit difficult until I was established with a warehouse properly.
I didn't actually think about that. So of course, so how many years were you running your business from Hong Kong?
I think like four.
That's quite a long time.
Yeah, it was. And it was, it obviously had its drawbacks as well as its advantages. The kind of time difference thing was sometimes awkward, and I would get, look at my phone in the middle of the night and get emails and be like, oh God, no, I need, the having different working hours was quite difficult. But basically, because I had the warehouse set up here, and orders would just go out through them, it wasn't too much of a barrier, but it was obviously, it's been a lot easier since I've been back in the UK. But then I was establishing that sort of the supplier side of things in Hong Kong. So yeah, it's a good mix.
So when you were getting started wholesaling, was the idea always to find find stores in the UK? Was that always the intention?
I was actually open. I've always been open to kind of stocking everywhere. Yes, like definitely the UK has always been sort of my strongest market for stockists, and is now definitely kind of where I have the most stockists. But yeah, I was kind of, again, from Suck, I was confident that we could sell anywhere in theory. And America was one of the places that, even from quite early on, I had a few stockists there. And yeah, you know, I was looking also for distributors because I used to deal with distributors at Suck UK. So I knew that was another option. And I did work with a few distributors in Europe. And it has, some of them have worked out and some of them haven't so much. But yeah, I was very much open to like, I'll sell anywhere.
Well, that's great. And I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone who's sold via distributors. So would you mind just explaining a little bit about how that works? Because that just might be interesting to someone who's never thought of going down that route.
Yeah, sure. Like, I think, especially at the moment, especially in Europe, I think it's can be a really good solution. Because obviously, since Brexit, all the import issues have been a nightmare, personally. And I think lots of other brands also found that what used to be quite a straightforward process of just importing is, you know, delays and expensive import fees. And so, yeah, if you can find a distributor, I worked with some good ones in for Germany, for example. And basically, they would have exclusivity for Germany with my brand. So I wouldn't sell to any other shops in Germany. And if anyone approached me in Germany, I'd say, please get in touch with our distributor. And so, yeah, they would basically buy at like maybe 30-35% discount on my wholesale price. But the benefit is that they would buy in bulk and they would sort out the delivery from my warehouse. So, yeah, so they would kind of deal with the whole, they would just pay me in a lump. Then they hold the stock in Germany and then sell to the stores from their warehouse. So for stores in Germany, it made sense for them because they weren't having to import and worry about duty charges and excess things like that. And then the distributor would do trade shows to promote the brand and, yeah, contact there. And they would obviously represent other brands as well. So they would go to a store with, you know, a selection of different brands and they could sell products from all these different companies. So, yeah, and so in theory, it's a really good, I mean, it can be a really good model.
That's really interesting. Is approaching a distributor, because I'm assuming it's a case of you approaching them in a lot of cases. I'm sure that now your brand is, you know, really well known. Maybe you're getting people approaching you. But when it comes to approaching distributors yourself, does it work in a similar way to approaching retailers?
Yeah, I'd say very similar. I think like the best way probably to find a distributor is to look at brands that are similar to yours or brands that, you know, not necessarily in competition because you don't really want to have competing brands, but brands that, yeah, you are in the same realm. You know, they're distributors for very specialist things. So you'd have like maybe kitchenware distribution, or I think generally I would always fit into kind of gift distributors, but you want to be like not at that novelty level. So yeah, finding kind of the right kind of fit. If you can see that the products that they're selling, you would see those in a store next to yours usually, then it's probably a good fit. And so, yeah, I would usually just approach this, yeah, the same way as a retailer, basically, yeah, just contacting and saying, could be a good fit, would you like a conversation? And if you can go to trade shows to meet them, that's another good thing to do if you have the time and the money to do it, to go to, you know, visit Ambiente, for example, or Maison Objet and see the kind of the bigger stands where they're representing a few brands. Yeah.
Oh, of course, I didn't think about the fact that distributors, of course, are attending trade shows as well.
Yeah, usually, so they might find you, like for the top draw, often we get some distributors kind of wandering around and they might find you that way. But and also if they'll be exhibiting on their home turf, yeah, which is where you could find them if you're, if you're particularly looking for France, for example, then yeah, go to Maison Objet and see kind of the stands.
And that's really interesting. And actually thinking about it, when I went to Top Draw last September, that was the first time I'd been, and I did actually meet a toy brand distributor who had a stall there as well. And I only know they were distributor because I spoke to them, but I think it's probably fair to assume that some of the bigger stands could have been distributors.
Yeah.
Certainly not all of them, some of them would have been brands, but I'm sure that it's probably a case of if you were interested, I don't know what your thoughts on this are, but I suggest that people maybe go to a trade show, walk around, talk to some people and keep
definitely.
An open mind and just see who you can meet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talking to other brands that you kind of admire or that are on the same sort of weight path as you is really, really invaluable to get those contacts. And it's often by like a word of mouth introduction, like, oh, you should try talking to these guys. And that's certainly how lots of my agents and distributors have worked out. So
Oh, that's good. That's good to know that that is in fact useful advice.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned earlier that you're also wholesaling your products in the US. So how did that come about? Because I don't want to assume that you didn't go over there and hold a lot of trade shows, but did you do that or did you do something different?
Yeah, no, I've never done a trade show in America, actually. I would like to, but no, it definitely, I don't think it's necessary to get started. And yeah, I actually sell through Fair, and that's probably where the majority of my US stockists have come from, is through this wholesale platform called Fair.
That's really interesting. I think I've heard of Fair because, again, when I went to Top Draw, they were one of, I think they might be one of the sponsors. They were certainly giving out coffee at the station anyway. And that was the first time I'd come across them, and I've had a look. And am I right in thinking they're a wholesale platform so that small, well, perhaps not only small, but retailers can go on there and they can buy product in wholesale directly from the site? Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. They've just basically kind of made it like a sort of Etsy platform for business to business. So yeah, you list your products, it looks just like an online store, and they customers can buy only in packs of your minimum quantities at wholesale prices. And I think they have to qualify through Fair to, you know, to prove that they're like a physical store or they have a website. But yeah, once they're qualified, it's kind of the orders just come to you. It's very much like an easy kind of way of just turning on a tap of orders. Like, you don't really have to sort of have that, you know, usually with stockists, you'd kind of get in touch and introduce the products and send the catalogue and send over a price list. Whereas it's a lot of kind of cold customers coming in and just having an order that you accept, which is great because obviously it saves all that time of, you know, you finding the customer and things. So yeah, we've had a lot of success with Fair. And another great thing about them, although this might be changing now, is that they have been covering the delivery fees for you and the customer. So that's been kind of amazing, really, that, you know, you just have to say, I guess I accept this order, and then you ship it with your, you know, FedEx, whoever, and then you type in how much it cost, and then Fair will cover the cost of that shipping.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's kind of too good to be true. And I think now they are actually starting to say that those offers are limited and it's only limited to insiders. And so it's just, yeah, definitely worth being aware that those, I think they wanted to get, you know, all the, they want to get as many shops buying that way as possible, get as many brands on the platform as possible. And the terms will probably be less favorable, I guess, after the initial sort of getting you on. But it's still a really great platform. Like, I wouldn't have, you know, I've had, I don't know, a few hundred kind of stockists that I'm really sure would never have found my products without being just on Fair.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, they can have smaller, well, you can set your minimum order as well. So these are kind of generally smaller orders. I think I've set my minimum quite low just to make it easy. But yeah, it's worthwhile because you get, it's very low effort. I would say definitely if you're going to go through Fair, and I would recommend just trying it because it's free to list the products. Just be aware, yeah, the first order is 25% commission to Fair, and then reorders you'd pay 15% commission to Fair. So it's really worth nurturing those kind of customers. I always try and send like a thanks so much for email message, and you know, kind of try and get them onto my mailing list as well, so that in the future, so they'll come back in the future and place another order. And you know, reorders, yeah, it's going to be less commission, so it's worth kind of keeping them as a customer. And if you send them your link directly, then it's 0% commission. So it can be a really good way for customers that are maybe already ordering, that they can make the most of a free shipping deal that Fair's offering, or there's discounts that they often have that I give 5%, Fair give 5%. So the customer can really make the most, and they can order anytime. It's not like having that back and forth of, is this in stock? Because it follows my Shopify stock levels. So it's like live ordering, which I don't have, as I don't have a wholesale platform that does that. So so there's lots of benefits.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm sold. not that I sell anything. Yeah. Should I? I would be sold, because that does sound great.
You should. Yeah.
Does it completely sync with Shopify then? Does it pull in the product details and everything?
Yeah. So you can like upload the products that way, just by getting them synced over, and then you can choose not to, or you can choose to sync it to your Shopify for stock. So yes, so it's just one more less thing to manage. If you know you're marking things that's out of stock, it should just do it all for you. Yeah.
Wow. It certainly sounds a lot more passive than sort of making lots of phone calls or sending emails. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing that, because I think there's, well, you've definitely, you know, told us you're doing both, but it definitely sounds worth doing as something additional, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. If you can afford to be selling, you know, to with that 25% commission, like it's definitely worth giving it a go. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it kind of progresses from here, because obviously, yeah, I think they have all these big incentives and free shipping, and they were even covering duties and taxes, which is, you know, amazing, because I think that's something that puts international customers off from ordering from, you know, UK brands, for example, in America. They, you know, they don't like that there might be duties and taxes on bigger orders. And yeah, Fair for a while we're covering all of those, so that was just like a really good thing to be able to say, like, don't worry if you do get charged, you know, Fair will cover it. So yeah, it's I would definitely recommend. The other one is Anchor Store as well. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No, I haven't.
So that's another B2B marketplace. I think they're more focused on Europe, and I do sell on there as well, but a lot less, because I haven't really been putting that much effort into it. But it's very similar. I think the commission rate is probably kind of the same, but yeah, they kind of specialize, I think, more in Europe. So that's another one to check out if you're looking for B2B.
That's really worth knowing. Thank you. And I'm assuming that certainly at the moment, there's no restrictions to how many you can be on. So none of them say, oh, you have to be on us exclusively at the moment. I know these things might change.
Yeah, no, no, as far as I know. And I think, you know, I think at the moment they just want to grow as big and as quickly. I went to some of their kind of drinks and they've got big plans. So I think, yeah, they're not keeping on top of it in that way at the moment, no. So yeah, I would say kind of no reason not to be on multiple platforms.
Thank you. And is there anything else you think people should know about using wholesale platforms? Any tips or advice? I mean, you've told us a lot already, so don't worry if there isn't.
No, I mean, I think you know, I guess your images really have to sell the product, because there's not much else to go on, and you know, you don't really have a pretty catalog necessarily that people are going to see. So yeah, just make sure images are good, and I think adding new products regularly helps you stay sort of at the top of the page and to be on the found section. So it can come in lulls. I find that it's very much when I'm busier, I get busier and busier. I think maybe, you know, if brands are ordering, I think you tend to climb up the ranks. So at the moment it's really quiet. Obviously it's January as well, everyone's a bit quiet, but so maybe, you know, in the quieter times, adding new products and maybe putting on a little sale or discount just to entice people, it's probably worthwhile.
That's really good to know, thank you. And I think that certainly makes sense. I think that works, a lot of platforms work that way, don't they, that the more sales you get, the more you're shown, and therefore the more you get, which is why it can be so hard to even get started, because you just get
absolutely
this cycle of those who are doing well continue to do well. Well, thank you, that's super useful. And I didn't think about that with the images, but yes, I guess it's like a lot of marketplaces where presumably customers are searching and then just getting a page of results, which are pictures, so that's really useful.
Yeah absolutely.
And that was a great point you made also about the margins as well, and just making sure you can absorb those fees.
It's definitely worth thinking, and then delivery on top or not. And yeah, I guess the last one is really just to nurture those, because, you know, you don't know at what point Fair might suddenly not be an option anymore. It might stop altogether. So if you can sort of have contact details, you know, so that you don't lose that store if anything were to go wrong with Fair, and they could always order direct. You know, I think it's good to try and start a relationship. It's quite hard because it's quite a faceless sort of platform, and I don't get much back and forth usually from customers, but sometimes, you know, it's always worth just sending a message saying, oh, thanks so much, it means a lot that you're stocking the products, and sort of show that human side.
That's excellent advice, thank you, because you're right, there's, with all of these platforms that we don't own, there is always a chance that they might just vanish. So yeah, that's useful. And I'm assuming that Fair don't give you the customer details either, so unless they choose to add themselves to your mailing list or send you their email address.
Exactly, you just have to sort of ask if they'd like to sign up with you, kind of thing.
Oh, it definitely sounds worth doing that proactively. Well, thank you so much for that. It was just, I think that's been invaluable, everything that you've shared.
I'm glad.
Thank you so much. I've got one final question for you before we finish, Emma, if that's okay. Which sure. is, what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators? And I know it's hard, and I know you've shared a lot. If you wanted to leave yeah. us with something, what would it be?
Yeah, no problem. I think it's probably maybe more down to kind of how I think, you know, a lot of product creators and small businesses work on their own, and the whole kind of the benefit of having your own business is, you know, that flexibility of lifestyle. And but I think that can be quite hard to kind of to work with your own energy and, like, you know, work with your own time when you're feeling creative and when you're feeling actually like I don't feel creative today. But, you know, I guess basically I'm trying to say is, like, the whole point of being your own boss is to be a good boss to yourself and not sort of give yourself a hard time if things aren't, like, going that well. I used to just set myself kind of a 9-to-6 working day, but actually I found that that's not necessarily the best way to be productive. And, you know, if I'm just sat at my computer just not really achieving anything, then I do just go for a walk and listen to a podcast, or I'm lucky that I can stitch as part of my kind of work, even though it feels really weird, especially like a cross stitch a trade show time when I'm trying to stitch up samples and I'm manically cross stitching. It doesn't feel like work. But yeah, I think just kind of, yeah, allowing yourself to use time as it works for you, and give yourself a break if, you know, it's not all happening every day. Because I think I went through a few years at the beginning when I really did late hours and weekends, and I really put all of my energy into my business. And that's, you know, put me in the position I am in now, where I don't necessarily have to burn the candle all the time. And yeah, just allowing myself to sort of work with my energy when I'm feeling creative, and know that it'll come back. So yeah,
that's great advice, thank you. And I can definitely see that if you're doing something creative, you can't, it's not something you can just turn on and off, is it? You're either feeling it or you're not. So
yeah,
yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, and kind of this idea that, you know, always having to launch, I think I felt like I always had to have new products coming. But yeah, I think, you know, people just, you know, they not everyone's always seen everything that you've done in the past, so you can always just present a different product in a different way, yeah, and still feels new even if you're not making new all the time.
That makes sense. Thank you so much, and thank you for everything you shared, Em. I'm going to link to your website and your socials and everything else in the show notes.
Lovely,
so people
thank
can go
you
and take a look. And thank you again.
That's great, no worries. No, it was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again, and see you next week. If you've been inspired to start a podcast in 2024, I really recommend my podcast host, Captivate. Captivate were my top pick when I started podcasting 4 years ago because of how easy it was for a complete novice like me to get started. I've stuck with them for the last 4 years because Captivate is still really simple to use. They keep adding great new features like the ability to share ads like these, and they've just been really reliable. So when you're ready to start your own podcast, you can use the link in the show notes and get a free 7-day trial with Captivate.